not accustomed to, then even though the system may not be more complex than that which was the one where you came from, but if you don't know the terminology, you don't know the symbols, it can appear to be very, very daunting. Over 20 years ago, my wife and I spent a year in Boston, and we had a Shabbos guest, an Israeli, who had come for a conference of MIT, and the conference was being held in one of the resorts around Boston, and we asked him, what are you eating there? So he says, I'm eating salami sandwiches. So he said, you're eating salami sandwiches on what kind of bread? He said, I buy bread, and in other words, it has a kuf K, and I make salami sandwiches. He had no idea that the word dairy meant milk. He had no idea that whey was a part of milk. I mean, he was eating basar v'chala for the entire week without being aware of it because the terminology was simply different than the one that he had been used to. And so, hu hadin, when someone comes from Chutz La'aretz, Eretz Yisrael, the terminology is different, and the symbols are somewhat different. So I made a page, actually this isn't my page, this is a page that the women in Michala had passed out a number of years ago. I just tried to update it a little, with the fact that on this page, believe it or not, there are symbols, and these symbols represent what are called Heksherim L'Mahadrin. Now just one word, that which states on it kosher, and it has a organization which is behind it, be it Rabbanut Yavne, be it Rabbanut Eilat, be it Rabbanut anything, one can assume is kosher. Kosher is kosher. If there, we pass in that Eid Echad Ne'eman Bisurim, we spoke today in the Kashrus, in Yisr V'Heter, about the fact that maybe one just can't believe any Jew who wears a kippah or a woman who covers their hair, but if we have someone who was Muchzak, who was Ne'eman, who has reputation for knowing what he's talking about, we believe him. And therefore, if you see something which is under a Rabbanut and it says Kasher, it's irrelevant if it's the Rabbanut Tel Aviv or Rabbanut Netanya or Rabbanut Kiryat Shmona, it's kosher. And anyone who tells you it's not kosher, I don't think is being totally honest with you. However, it is not L'mahadrin. What does L'mahadrin mean? It means that there are different standards of Heksherim. Classically, when something is kasher, then there are all sorts of rules that one works by. One of the main rules that applies to the world of kashrus is Acharei Rabim L'hatot, that we have a concept of going after a majority, we have a concept in certain areas of Bitul V'shishim, something being nullified in 1 to 60. L'mahadrin means that we try not to use any of those leniencies, even though they are halachically valid. One wants to go all the way. One wants to be more certain of oneself. When one is one of Ochlei Haman, one is living on the manna of the American Jewish community, who are supporting you in order to be able to allow your husbands to return the favor and at some point be involved in Chinuch and Rabbanut, it appears to me, and this is what we've always done in the Kollel, that the standard of the Kollel as the collective is a standard of Mahadrin. Namely, the food which is served in the Machon Lev dining room are using these Hechsherim of the Mahadrin. Were you to have a Kiddush or a Simcha, we would expect that if you're serving the entire Kollel, that the Hechsherim that you will bring in will be the Mahadrin. Everyone can make a decision in terms of his own home, but if you're hosting other people in the Kollel, I would also suggest that you keep the standard of Mahadrim, that we have a consistent standard, and depending as to where one goes shopping, it should not be that difficult to find Heksherim LeMahadrim. The large, less expensive supermarkets in Yerushalayim, Shefa Shuk, Zolpo, etc., they are all generally, 90% of their products are Mahadrim. So these are the These are the symbols. On the top of the page, for reasons that are not purely arbitrary, but it's sort of like the Heksher with the best reputation, if you put it that way, is the Badatz of the Eid HaRedis of Yerushalayim. I'm not talking over here about politics, we're simply talking about the fact that they have a very, very efficient, well-oiled organization, and they don't put up with any kunsim. Everyone knows that if you want the Badatz or the Eid HaRedis, that you can't play any games with them. And so that is a very, very fine symbol of kashrus. Moving down the left side of the page, underneath that is the hashgacha of bells. That again, that would say the Mahadrin. Underneath that is the hashgacha of Sheirit Yisrael, the Rav Karelitz from Bnei Brak. Underneath that is the Rabbanut HaRashit of Rehovot, Rav Simcha Kuk. Now, Rabbanut HaRashit of Rehovot has two symbols. It has a rectangle and an oval. The rectangle is regular kosher, and the oval is kosher lemahadrin. Again, with the difference as to whether one is taking advantage of halachic leniencies that are part of the system, but are not the same standard as the mahadrin. Underneath that is the Chuk Chasam Sofer. There are two Chuk Chasam Sofers, one from Bnei Brak, one from Petach Tikva. They're both fine. Underneath that is Rav Landau, who is the Av Beis Din of Bnei Brak. And then there are two, which I don't have pictures. One is Rav Machpud, who generally, the chickens that are distributed on Erev Shabbos many times comes from his Hashgacha. And the other is Rav Werner. Both Rav Machpud and Rav Werner, if it says Mahadrin, underneath that is a symbol which is made up sort of three parts, which one finds on Tnuva, Vadat Mahadrin Tnuva. This is the Mahadrin of Rav Wittman. It's considered to be a very, very fine Hechsher. Not all Tnuva products have it. In Yerushalayim, more have it than don't have it. And finally, in this column, from someone is up in the vicinity of Haifa. So there is an organization there called Nazer HaKashrut under Rav Zolden, which is also Mahadrin. Moving over to the right side of the page, the first and the third symbols are the symbols of the Ravnut Rashit of Yerushalayim, Mahadrin. You'll find them on bags of milk many times, this circle with a little choma of Yerushalayim inside. And the third one generally is found on meat products. It will say Rabbanut HaRashit Yerushalayim, Kasher LeMahadrin. It's found also on the Tu'udot. In between, there's Badatz of Agudas Yisrael, which is also a fine hashgacha. They give on bubblegum. And then there's, just moving to the bottom of the page, Rav Rubin, who used to be the head of the Vadat Kashrut of Rav Kook in Rehovot, opened up his own hashgacha. He has Rav Kook's name on the top and his name on the bottom, Rav Simcha Kuk, Rav Avraham Rubin. That's also a very, very fine hashgacha LeMahadrin. And then I wrote in the name of Rav Efrati Mahadrin, and I'll just give a little background over here. In the past year, there has been a bit of a turmoil in terms of the Rabbanut Mahadrin of Yerushalayim. The Rabbanut Mahadrin of Yerushalayim had a better reputation than Rabbanut Mahadrin of other cities. As you see, I've only put on Rabbanut Mahadrin of two cities, of Yerushalayim and Rehovot. And they were always considered to be above the fray. They were considered to be hechsherim that you don't have to necessarily subscribe to the Rabbanut HaRashit of Eretz Yisrael, etc., in order to be able to rely on their hechsherim. The last year, there was a bit of a turmoil. There was a change in terms of the individuals who had been in charge for many, many years, both of the hotels and of the both of the restaurants and of the fruits and the vegetables, and there were machlokot that I think were not totally l'shem shamayim. In any case, the Rav who had been in charge of the fruits and vegetables, the Rabbanut Yerushalayim Mahadrin Rav Efrati, opened up his own kashrus organization. And so one finds Rav Efrati Mahadrin, but from my investigation of what remains in the Rabbanut Yerushalayim, it's basically, I'm not aware that there should be any problems. I spoke to people who are there, I know the people who are there, and most of them are the same people who were there before. And Le'efach Kinasofrim Tar Bechachma, the moment that there is more competition, everyone's looking over his shoulder and trying to outdo the other one, that just raises the level of kashrut. So rather than having one organization of Mahadrin in Yerushalayim, now you have two organizations of Mahadrin in Yerushalayim. I think that you can rely upon both of them as being on the level of Mahadrin. I just would like to mention what does it mean, Mahadrin, in terms of various products. So in terms of milk products, what could be a problem in terms of milk? It comes from cows. the Yerushalayim, at Eretz Yisrael, Baruch Hashem, we have Jewish farms and dairies, because of the nature of the cow, work 7 days a week. And the question is, how are the cows milked on Shabbat? Certainly the cow has to be milked on Shabbat, otherwise it would be Tzar Balei Chayim. However, the question is, how are they milked, and are they milked in a manner in which there is no Chilul Shabbat? So the milk products that are Mahadrin means that they come from milk that was milked without Chilul Shabbat. It either means that the milk that was milked on Shabbat simply went to waste. It simply was milked just to ease the pain of the cow, or that it was milked by a proper machine in which it was attached to the cow before the machine went on and was removed from the cow after the machine went off. There are such machines. And so if there's a Mahadrin sign on the milk products, be it milk, be it cheese, etc., it means that there's no Chilul Shabbat involved in that area. If we're talking about puddings have emulsifiers in them and stabilizers. Now, in Chutz La'aretz, it's known that if you have gelatin, you have a problem. Even if you have what's called kogel, which means that this gelatin came from bones of animals that after they were... these bones, after the animal was killed, were dried out and pulverized, etc., under hashgacha that we're dealing over here with absolutely no moisture being left in the bones. So in America, there is such a thing called kogel, which generally is not accepted by the OU or by most of the major kashrus organizations. It used to come out of Philadelphia. There were always marshmallows made with kogel. But in Eretz Yisrael, there's some mechan tshuva that was written by Reb Chaim Ozer and was seconded by Rabbi Yecheskel Abramsky, the Chazon Yecheskel, that it's possible to have a kosher gelatin coming from bones of non-kosher animals. However, that's not Mahadrin. And so if you want to keep the same standard in terms of emulsifiers and that you kept in America where you didn't use gelatin products, so in terms of the puddings, you should certainly look for a Mahadrin label. Then they use, I guess like in America, some vegetable emulsifier, agar-agar, something like that. And the third area of Mahadrin in terms of milk products is in terms of hard cheeses. Hard cheeses are made on a culture, and the culture generally in Eretz Yisrael comes from Chutz La'aretz, and some of the cultures come from products that in America are OUD or OKD, in which one's not dealing with Chol of Yisrael that was under Hashgacha the entire time. Rav Moshe has a tshuva, says that it's permitted, but certainly it's not Mahadrin. And so over here, the products of Chalav, the milk products that are Mahadrin, A, there's no Chilul Shabbos, B, there is no gelatin in terms of the emulsifiers, and C, they don't use any culture that would not be pure Chalav Yisrael. What Rav Moshe said to Risa, we'll discuss it in Mishnah. Those who are learning Basar V'Chalav, we'll learn about it when we get to those areas of Basar V'Chalav. In terms of meat products. So most of you meat products will be well. Most of you will be eating chicken most of the year. That's a fact of life in terms of the price of meat as opposed to the price of chicken. So you should know that although in America when they speak about a glatt kosher chicken, that's simply PR, simply Hollywood. There's no such thing as a glatt kosher chicken in America. Because glatt means that the lungs are checked to be sure that they're smooth. No one checks the lungs of a chicken in America. They simply assume that chickens are basically healthy, and there's no need to check the lungs. But in Eretz Yisrael, we live in a country here that has very, very diverse climates, and there are those areas, particularly when you get closer to the Negev, or even in Harei Yehuda, where in the daytime it can be quite warm, and at night it can be quite cold. And that brings about pneumonia. Chickens also get pneumonia, and then if they get pneumonia, then sometimes they get adhesions in their lungs. And so the Mahadrin chickens means that the lungs are checked, not just spot checked, one every 10 chickens, but rather every single chicken, They check the lungs to be sure that there are no improper adhesions. And so you have a concept of glatt kosher chickens, namely that the lungs were found to be smooth, as opposed to a kosher chicken, which either they're somech on rov, they take the leniency of acharei rabim lahatot, to following the majority, which is halachically permissible, but it's not mahadrin. Or they, in other words, if they see an adhesion, they try and see whether it can be removed, again, in a halachic manner, and then put back on the assembly line. Well, the glatt kosher means that they check the lungs to be sure that they are totally smooth, and only those chickens continue along the assembly line. Another aspect of the mahadrin is that chickens generally are fed to be succulent beyond what would their normal weight, namely that chickens are top-heavy, which means that their legs have to hold a body which is heavier than HaKadosh Baruch Hu intended the legs to hold, and that can cause problems in their knees. Like when we get overweight, you know, our knees hurt us. So there's an area of sinews which is called somet hagidin, and if there are sinews over there that are torn, cartilage which is torn, that's a problem of treifus. And so in the regular chickens, in other words, regular kosher, again, they sum rov. Most chickens manage to, in their relatively short lifetime before the shefted, to be able to wobble around without too much problems. But in the mahadrin, they check the tzomet hagidin as well. So sometimes you may find in your chicken that there'll be a slit in the skin in the pulka. That doesn't mean that someone was taking a sneak peek at your chicken's pulka, but simply they were looking at the tzomet hagidin. You don't have to slit it. Most people who are adept can also feel from the outside if there is a problem. Thirdly, in order that the chickens not get pneumonia in the first place, they're inoculated. The moment you inoculate a chicken, it means you stick a needle into the chicken. You stick a needle into a chicken in the wrong place, then you cause it to be a trefa. And so the mahadrin chickens receive their inoculations under a hashgacha to be certain that they are inoculated without making them treif. The fourth area of mahadrin in chickens is the melicha. That we'll learn in Hilchos Melicha that the meat of the chicken has to be salted not only from the outside but also from the inside. And so when you have a cavity, it requires a bit of labor to be able to put the salt into the cavity. In terms of the outside, the chicken can just roll around in a mountain of salt and everything is fine. But if you want the inside to be salted, then the salt has to be shoveled into the inside of the chicken. A chicken isn't a turkey. There's a relatively small area in which the salt can be put. So you'll find sometimes also in mahadrin chicken, under certain hashgachot, that when you defrost the chicken, it just flaps apart. I mean, and that was done on purpose, that it would be easier to be maleach it if it was cut, rather than looking like a very fine roast on Thanksgiving. It just sort of flaps open. The last area of hidur that I'm aware of is the number of chickens that are shechted before the knife is checked. The knife is constantly being checked. Is it checked after every 10 chickens, after every 100 chickens? Again, we have a chazaka that a knife that was once checked should be okay until we know that it's a problem. But the more often that it's checked, the more certain that one is that one will catch the problem before the chickens are shechted. In terms of beef, the hashgacha of mahadrin is basically that the beef was salted before being frozen, namely that it was shechted. Most beef in Eretz Yisrael comes from South America, so there is beef which is frozen, brought to Eretz Yisrael, and then salted. That's what we call basar kafu. It's much better on the level of being yotzei all the days of the poskim that the meat be salted yet in South America before it's frozen and sent to Eretz Yisrael. That it that would be a mahadrin on the meat, that the salt was done according to all the opinions, not just according to many of the opinions. Moving over to baked goods, the mahadrin is A, that challah was properly removed. I would assume that you say, well, that's not mahadrin, that's kosher. No, it's that it has to be properly removed. Correct. But there is someone specifically in charge to be certain that that's done. And then, I'm sorry, usually show and tell, I usually bring with me a sifter, and I forgot to bring it, but there are women here who were here last year as well. So just check with them what a sifter should look like. It should look like a woman's nylon stocking with very, very small holes that would take a bit of time to sift the flour through. One has to realize that Israel is the crossroads of the world. According to Chazal, it's Tabur Haaretz. This is the navel of the world. Everything began from here, from under the Mizbeah, from the Amot Ashitim. That's where all the world was created. So it makes sense that it's the crossroads of the world. But even in terms of geography, we're between Africa and Asia and Europe, America is somewhere else. And because of that, all the bugs of the world tend to cross through Eretz Yisrael. And it's very, very beautiful that we have more bugs here per square inch than anywhere else in the world, as you may find in your apartments. And bugs tend to grow from very, very small eggs into larvae and then into bugs. And so the sifting is meant not to get rid of the eggs. The eggs will go through anything in the world. But eggs of bugs are kosher. You don't have to worry. You can eat bug eggs. They're not trace. A bug becomes a bug when it begins to have the ability to move. A larva already has the ability to move. And these mesh sifters are meant to catch the larva before they were to go into your cake. Again, what happens is that if you buy flour and you don't sift it, and you leave it in a warm place, it's very likely that the eggs that are, everything has eggs in them, that the eggs will begin to hatch, I guess, and whatever they do, they turn into larvae, and the reason that we sift is to get rid of these larvae. It's not to get rid of pebbles, it's not to get rid of bugs that you could see with your eye without knowing, even if you're looking at what to look for, but it's to get rid of the larvae. I tell the story, but it's very true, that many years ago, one of my children offered to help my wife sift the flour, and when she was making the dough, she left it for a little while to answer the phone. Kind of was a relatively long conversation, and when she came back, she saw like little lines in the dough, and it looked very, very strange to her why there should be lines in the dough. And so she asked my son, like, what did you do? You sifted the flour. He said, sure, I sifted the flour. What do you do with what was left in the sifter after you finish? He said, I put that in as well. Because it looked white. It was all covered with flour. But those were the little larvae that were sort of making their way across the, going to wherever, finding, you know, it's had special territory, new areas to go to. And so, of course, you threw away the dough, but it means that this is a possibility. So the best thing to do is, when you buy flour, is to sift it. And after you sift it, put it in the freezer, if you have a freezer which is large enough, or if not in the freezer, in the refrigerator, that then, even if you're not planning on using it within the next few hours, nothing is going to grow when it's on such a temperature. Whatever bugs would be there would grow under in warmth, not if they're cold. Rav Landau, who is the one who gives the hashgacha on Osem, he insists that the flour be resifted every day. I want to say that flour is left over from the previous day. They resift it in the morning before using it, in order to be certain that even if anything changed from an egg to a larva at night, it would be thrown away. So. When you see in Yerushalayim, all the large bakeries, there are basically two very large bakeries in Yerushalayim, Berman and Anshul, so they all have the badats. The badats basically means that the sifters are checked on a daily basis to be sure that they're not torn, that everyone is eating bread, which contains bread and nothing else. Number five is fruits and, I'm sorry, in my notes, not in your notes. I mean, we mentioned milk products. We mentioned meat products and chicken products, baked goods, fruits and vegetables. So fruits and vegetables, here again we have a problem of bugs. Gush Katif were pioneers in terms of creating insect-free bugs that were grown in hothouses and were grown above sand rather than in the earth. And so you had to wash off the leaves, that they shouldn't be sandy, but they were grown pretty much insect-free, and it turned into a whole industry. Now they're trying to move the industries, this industry of growing things bug-free, into what's left of Eretz Yisrael. So generally you can get, under different labels, bug-free lettuce, bug-free cabbage, bug-free corn on the cob. In the frozen fruit food department, there you have the bodeg products that you're more accustomed to as in America. The second area of Mahadrin, of course, relates to Shemitah, but that's we're still a few years off for most of us, and it was so long ago that nothing currently in the market, to the best of my knowledge, has a problem of Shemitah. And of course, in terms of Trumot Ma'asrot, we live in Eretz Yisrael. There's a Tosfos that Reb Chaim Cohen claimed that nowadays Jews are exempt from living in Eretz Yisrael because it's too hard to deal with mitzvos atlios ba'aretz, mafresh trumos ma'asros, but we've gotten it down pretty much to a science, and the Mahadrin means that the trumot ma'asrot are basically removed not only on the wholesale level but also on the retail level when it gets to the individual stores, so as to be certain that nothing escaped someone's knowledge. And there is a special hidur of being mafrish one's own trumot ma'asrot even after one has bought products from a store under a mahadrin hashgacha. In order to do that, it's not very, very difficult. If your husbands want, I have various pamphlets in my office that explain it in English and Hebrew, various languages. Basically, what it means is that you have to have a little scale, and if you have a bathroom scale, it won't help you that much because you eat a lot of fruits and vegetables. But if you have a little kitchen scale and you weigh what you purchased and remove a little more than one hundredth in terms of the weight and put that aside as truma and trumat ma'aser, and then one is poda, one redeems the ma'aser sheni. This year is a year of ma'aser sheni. One redeems the ma'aser sheni onto a coin, then and one says the proper formula, then everything is fine. The little more than 1/100th is put into a little plastic bag and thrown into the garbage, and the coin is set aside for the next few years until we have a Biur Masros on Erev Pesach. The problem is, in terms of the coin, is that it can only be used for that which is more than a Sheva Pruta, unless it's a special Pruta Chamura, and therefore there is a tzaddik who lives in Shalavim, who has a keren l'chilo ma'aser sheni. He has in his house all sorts of coins, and he constantly is changing his coins, moving them around. He has coins for safek ma'aser, for vade ma'aser sheni, and you just join his keren by phoning 538-3123, and you say you want to join the keren l'chilo ma'aser sheni, and you say that you're learning in a kolel, which is true, and you get a special price. Then they send you a formula that you say that you are redeeming the Ma'aser Sheni on the coins that are kept in the Keren L'Chilo Ma'aser Sheni, and you don't have to worry about whether it's more than a Sheva Pruta, less than a Sheva Pruta, is it a Safek, is it a Vaday, etc. But that's, again, a Hidur on a Hidur. In other words, one certainly can be Samech on the Hashgachot that are on this Mahadrin list, that they are Mafresh Shumot and Ma'asrot properly. But if one wants to be certain, one can be mafresh one's own trumot ma'asrot. In terms of hotels, or there are hotels that in Yerushalayim are mahadrin or have a mahadrin menu, and that they have on the menu itself certain courses that have a star next to them, that this is mahadrin, the Ramada Renaissance, the Sheraton Plaza, the Inval. They usually have a Mahadrin course. They'll say, well, we're offering now steak and chicken and lamb, and of these three, the chicken is Mahadrin. Then, you know, it's so if you keep to a Mahadrin standard, that would certainly be consistent with what you eat in the yeshiva. Chicken you'll be familiar with. Does anyone have any questions at this point? I'm sorry, for it's a quick overview, but it's an overview, yes? Spices generally should be kept in the refrigerator for the reasons that I mentioned, and simply in terms of doing your best to prevent any propagation of that which is not a spice, which may be in the container.
And you've had spices for the past 2 years, and there hasn't been anything inside. Do you sell in the refrigerator?
I don't think so. Yes?
In terms of sifters, if there's an electric sifter with the same mesh bottom as what's acceptable, then it's fine, right?
Wonderful. Yes, electric sifter is safe. You know, you could sit and learn instead of wasting your time sifting, sure. My children bought my wife an electric sifter after 32 years of marriage. But it saves time. It saves time and energy. There's no reason why not. Any other questions? Okay, if I can ask the men to please disappear for a few minutes. And
about 5 minutes.
Okay. One's fine. The Navi.